All right, I've got the books here in case I need to pull up something. I don't think I will, but JIC. Okay.
Jesus H. Christ.
Jesus H. Christ.
Jesus Ignacio Christ.
Ignacio.
Not, that would make Jesus a nacho. That's great.
Oh, I would love that. Nacho Jesus.
It's like Nacho Libre, but Nacho Jesus.
Hands off my Jesus.
You have to find a way to put this back in the show now.
Oh, did you hear that sigh? That's how I feel about this. Fuck it. Hello.
Hey.
Welcome to a little book club night.
As you all know, this is
The first step to a revolution.
Yeah, and we've done a few of these, but maybe fewer than we should. You know, maybe this is something we got to focus more on so that we can get, you know, further down the road of revolution.
Yeah, we need to get a printing press. We need to get going.
If any of you guys are big into pamphlets, hit us up.
Yeah, we need your expertise. I haven't designed a pamphlet in many moons, so.
So the best part about that, though, is when you're reading old stories about revolutions and stuff, and you're like, damn, you know, okay, they're doing a book club, they're doing pamphlets. They were in a Discord, and they were doing posts. In modern translations, you need to, like, translate that in your head of, like, what they were doing.
But there's more of a level of commitment, though, right? Don't you think?
Yeah, there is.
Okay.
To some extent. I mean, I would concede that.
You have to show up to a place.
Yeah, there's physical, yeah. That's true.
Anyway, we will be talking about two little novellas by Becky Chambers. The first titled A Psalm for the Wild Built, and the second A Prayer for the Crown Shy. This is from her Monk and Robot series. I will go ahead and say anything by Becky Chambers is like my fucking jam. Particularly if you are of a socialist stripe, you will enjoy the Record of a Spaceborn Few. That's about like a group of ships that have humans on it, and it's a pretty socialist society, I would say. You know, much is written about sharing the resources and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a really interesting one as well. And I think these books have a lot of that kind of good stuff in it too.
All right, yeah. From my background on this, these are the only two books by her that I've read. And I like them.
Yeah, yeah. She kind of has a rep for, like, I guess cozy sci-fi would be a good way to put it, or, like, feel-good sci-fi.
Yeah.
Which I really like and appreciate, because I think so much of sci-fi, especially now, is so gritty that it's like, I need an alternative.
Yeah. So. I saw that description, too. And I'm kind of the same mind, is that sci-fi as a genre, well, it's typical to many genres, I guess, that it's sort of like adventure or like, you know, mystery or thriller. It's got this sort of suspense that kind of dangles through it. But why not pair that with more of like the fiction? Fiction can have so many different, I don't know, so many different varieties to it that you can have something that is more cozy feeling.
Yeah.
And it definitely gives that across for sure.
Yeah. I mean, her first series, I don't know, like what the order of things are that she wrote, but her first in that series that I was talking about, A Long Way to a Small Angry Planet, is very much like a blend of like traditional sci-fi adventure, you know, kind of wacky hijinks, but mixed with that kind of found family element. So it's really, really good.
Okay.
But back to these books. We're going to start with kind of a real quick synopsis because, you know, they're little guys. It won't take long to get through what happens in it. And also not a ton happens. But then we'll get into really why we're here to talk about it on this show, which is the type of world that is described is very interesting and I think has a lot of potential.
We'll talk about what was revealed, what wasn't so much, you know, what we can kind of understand from this world and kind of what we think about that, like where we agree and whatnot.
Okay, so let's get into it. We start our story with our main character, Sibling Dex. We've got a main non-binary character. Love it. We have two non-binary characters, basically, as the main characters.
Yeah.
And we start with Sibling Dex and their life in the city. They are working in, like, the gardens in this, basically, a monastery. We learn very quickly about the religions of this world, which we'll get to.
Mm-hmm.
Put a pin in it. But basically, they, you know, get an itch to just change their whole life. They're like, screw this. I'm going to go become what's called a tea monk. And so they take a bicycle cart around the planet, which is called Panga. And they become sort of like a combination, you know, service worker in the sense that you're like, yeah, you're getting a cup of tea, but also really a therapist. Mm-hmm. People come up and tell them their problems, and then they make, like, they recommend a blend of tea, you know, like, let's say you need help sleeping, whatever it is. And then they just kind of enjoy it, and it's sounds very nice. And so, yeah, at first, you know, we're going along with this story, you know, it's kind of a bumpy start, and then Dex eventually becomes really good at this. But then they get an itch to move on again, and they become really fixated on the idea of a cricket, an insect that they think is probably extinct.
The millennial and later version of this is the whatever that whippoorwill bird that you hear the sound for on TikTok.
Mm.
The one that's like, doo, doo.
Oh, I don't know if I know this bird sound on TikTok.
It's a, people are like, where can you hear the sound anymore? Because like, it's just not around anymore, basically.
It's true. Like, bird populations are really getting decimated right now.
Yeah.
And bugs, honestly. And those are like pretty important species.
So if you used to kind of, you know, vibe to that late evening, little relaxing bird call into your night, and you've ever thought, what if I just pick up everything and like go after that and try to find it? That's kind of what Dex is doing here.
Totally, yeah. They're like, they find a recording of it labeled with a place that they've heard of, and so they're like, I'm gonna go to this place. And to do that, they have to go into the wilderness. And we learn that this world has been set up so that 50% of its land usage is given to the wilds. Like, no humans are supposed to go in there.
And that's not just 50% of the planet overall, but the land too, right?
The land, yeah, because like the oceans they basically don't touch. They're okay. Like, y'all can just have the oceans. Most of the coast you can have as well.
Yeah.
They have a few coastal cities, it sounds like, or towns.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, the whole dang planet. It seems like you can go there. Like, there is like a warning they get on like their, you know, basically like, maps app.
You sure?
Like, exactly. Like, oh, are you sure about this? You're not really, it's not recommended is kind of how it's put.
Not a good idea.
Like, you know, it's not safe. But they head out. And on the way, they meet a robot.
Quite by accident.
Extremely. Like, walks in on them naked. And a robot, we learned, has not been seen in hundreds of years. They were built in what's called the factory age to supplement the human workforce, but they were eventually, like, took over, replaced humans as workers, causing mass unemployment. Probably not a thing that's going to happen ever. Don't worry about it.
Probably, honestly, not in this way, but still.
Okay, yeah, because here's where it gets weird. Nobody knows why, but all of a sudden the robots gain sentience. They gain consciousness. And they're like, hey, we're going to peace out.
We would like to leave. And the humans are like, okay.
That's, yeah, we're going to talk about that. It's very bizarre. And so, yeah, they leave. They haven't been seen in hundreds of years. And this particular robot, whose name is Moscap, is here to ask humanity, what do you need? And so Dex agrees to let Moscap escort them to this place they're going, the Hermitage, on this mountaintop, where they think they're going to find the cricket, in exchange for giving it some insights on humanity. Moscap uses its pronouns, so that's what we'll be using. So they travel together, they learn a ton about each other, like, what are robots? What are you guys up to? And, you know, Moscap is really excited about learning about humans, too, and it's really cute. And the book ends with Moscap performing a tea ceremony for Dex, and Dex agrees to accompany it across its journey through Panga. Second book has even less of a plot, I would say. It's documenting their journey. Mm-hmm. They visit a lot of different settlements, and we kind of get, like, fun vibes. Like, there's a settlement on the river that's really cool. There's this one, like, that's based in treetops. There's a coastal place. And Moscap kind of gets to work figuring out what people need, which people interpret very literally of, like, you want to help me fix my door? Yeah. Which at first, like, Dex is, like, really uncomfortable. Shit.
Like, do not enslave this robot. Exactly. We just got a robot. Like, don't do that.
Yeah, like, this is not what we meant, guys. But, like, it ends up being a great kind of way for Moscap to, like, start interacting with people and understanding them, I think. But yeah, we learn a little more about why sibling Dex, like, seems to be struggling with, like, their mental health and, like, their whole kind of lack of ambition or, like, swaying ambitions. I don't know. Because they haven't been doing tea service, like, this whole time. And then Moscap is also kind of struggling with, like, its own mortality and, like, it gets broken at one point. Like, what does this mean? And yeah, at the end of the book, they decide, like, you know, they're supposed to end this tour in the city, and there's only really like one big city here, but they kind of put it off. They're like, we really like hanging out and we don't want to end this, so like we're just gonna go camping for a while. We don't really know what's coming up, we just know that like we want to keep hanging.
Yeah, and like the last scene is kind of an acceptance of that to some extent. It's left ambiguous, like, do they pack up and go back the next day? Like, what do they do? And I think that was kind of good. But if you are someone who does more identifying with than being annoyed by my frequent agonizings of like, are we doing enough on this show? Like, are we, I mean, what are we, real communists if we're not like doing things, activism and stuff? You know, if you identify with that to some extent, I think this book has a pretty good message about like being enough as a person and things.
I absolutely agree. I think it's a very comforting book overall. Like, I actually, the first time I read this, like, I was, like, in such a great spot. I had, like, literally, like, I had a mug of tea. I had the cat. I had, like, rain in the background. I was like, everything's perfect right now. So really recommend that setting if you can pull that off.
Yeah.
So let's get into kind of the world. We mentioned religion. That's a pretty big deal in this world.
Yeah. There are six gods. They have a pantheon of gods. They have three parent gods and three children gods. So I guess we can run through the gods, and then I kind of wanted to ask you about them.
Yeah. So we have Bosch, god of the cycle, who's represented by a sphere, pretty much like nature, right?
Like life and death, kind of?
Life and death, yeah.
That being the cycle, I suppose?
Yes. Grylum, god of the inanimate, represented by a pyramid, and that represents rock, water, atmosphere. So I guess things in nature that aren't alive.
Yeah.
Trichili?
Yeah, Trichili or Trichili.
Sure. God of the threads, represented by a thin vertical bar, representing chemistry, physics, the unseen.
Science boy. Science person.
Actually, whatever. Yeah, I don't know the gender of any of these gods, so. The child gods. So I feel like the parent gods,
They're more abstract.
It's like the universe. It's like that. This is where you live or what you are in. Mm-hmm. And the child gods seems to be more about like, here's what you should do you're in this.
Okay.
That's how I'm interpreting it anyway.
I was thinking more like big picture, like, okay, you got like living things, non-living things, and then the stuff that makes things happen. And then you have like specific, like, oh, we like, you know, construct or like, you know, specific human, but like living thing ideals of like pursuits, maybe. That's similar to what you...
I think so, yeah. Pursuits is... Yeah, the child gods are Chal, who is Little Sugar Bee, which is cute, god of constructs. So this can cover anything from, you know, very mechanical things to like artists and workshops, like those kinds of things. You have... this is sibling Dex's chosen god, Alele. I'm going to go with that.
I always said Alele.
Oh, I guess that's two L's, huh? Alele. Let's try that. Let's see if I can, if my mouth.
Do you like it, Alele?
Alele.
It's kind of like a, I don't know, it sounds human name almost. Like, Alele, come here.
That is, yeah. It sounds real stunning. Like, Alele.
It's a little country, yeah.
Finish your huckleberry pie. So, Alele is the god of small comforts and represented by the summer bear. So, tea monks tend to fall under this because they're offering comfort. But, you know, they can do a wide variety of things, like, you know, the gardens that they worked in previously. I'm sure there's lots of other things we didn't see. Mm-hmm. And then Samophar, god of mysteries, the Sunjay. I guess just more nerd stuff.
It's kind of nerdy. Yeah, later when they encounter, in the end of the first book, they encounter the Hermitage. They go to that ruined shrine. For Samophar, I think they have a library.
The library, that's right. And I think they mentioned that too, of like, oh, you should have met someone, you know, an academic, like a Samophar.
You should be traveling with a Samophar guy, because he'd be picking your fucking brain. All right, so we got the gods. My question to you is,
yeah,
obviously, if you were in this universe, you would be observing them all, because, you know, they're all part of your pantheon, but which one would be like your ride or die? Which one would you gravitate towards?
That, see, I'm very torn between Chaul and Alele.
What about Chaul? Because I get Alele. Like, that's... Yeah. I can see that.
Yeah, I'm very... I love comfort. Chaul, though, I mean, I wonder...
But you create.
I make stuff, is the thing. Like,
you're
crafty. Yeah, I make drawings. Yeah. So, I think it would be kind of both. I think I would, like, be kind of a dual worshiper or whatever, dual observer, because I make things to comfort people, you know?
Yeah.
So, whatever that thing is. I'm a bear bee.
That's good. I don't think it excludes you. You just, you know, end up in a different category.
I just get to wear two necklaces. Gaudy.
Me, I would be Samophar boy.
I knew it. You're such a nerd.
Just hang out in the library all day, learning all the things. That'd be me.
Hell yeah. Okay, so let's get into, I guess, more specifically, like, the history of this planet. It's kind of my next section.
Yeah, that is interesting for sure. So the planet we're talking about, Panga, it's a moon.
Yes.
Of a larger planet, Moton, which Panga itself has one continent. It does not seem to be a spacefaring planet.
See, this is my question. Because, you know, you read this, they call the people in it humans. And they, for all intents and purposes, sound exactly like us as humans. Mm-hmm. They never like, and anyway, here's my tail, you know?
Yeah.
So, do we think they originally came from Earth at one point? Do they ever mention that?
They don't. And they also don't elaborate too much on the bodies. There are arms and legs and torsos and
yeah, they could all be generals. Like fucking purple and we just don't know.
There's a great Asimov story that does that. At the end of it, you're like, holy shit, he's red. Like he's like this red creature thing. Like, and they're like marveling at the silly looking little guys, and they're humans.
Wow.
Anyway, yeah, we have no idea, really.
The also has, like, that's very clearly a human.
That's a human, yeah. Like, well, you know, and there's also sci-fi convention where either, humans are everywhere. Mm-hmm. Humans, just any planet, like, on Tatooine, they're fucking humans, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Or, B...
The Star Trek convention? Not literal convention.
No, but it's the same idea. That's the same thing as, like, humans are everywhere, basically. They're scattered from a forebear, a forerunner species, and they all... So that's everyone looks about. Like a human with a funny thing on their forehead.
That's what I'm talking about, yeah.
Or that whatever is indigenous to a place is described as human.
Mm.
Like, the convention is just, I am
that
human.
That is their word for it.
And maybe
it.
They look a little different, but if it's ambiguously told like this, you would never know. Like,
yeah. That was my question. I didn't think about it the first time I read it at all. I just, like, I just didn't care.
They were obviously human, yeah.
Yeah, but then I was like, wait a minute. Like, could there be something, like, I was, like, trying to think back on descriptions. Like, we never really talked about skin color that much, I don't think.
Mm-mm. No, I mean, you get facial hair.
You get hair. We know they got hair and facial hair.
But beyond that, everyone's just described as, like, hot or not.
Yeah, basically.
So
I mean, sibling Dex gets a little horny sometimes.
I'm just like, dang, all right. Bro here's got the looks. So yeah, that's the planet we're talking about, Panga. Like we said before, half inhabited, half wilded. And then the timeline thing, I think, is really interesting.
Yeah. So they reference the factory age. And this seems to be like hundreds and hundreds of years ago. I don't have like a date on it.
I don't either. No, it's left ambiguous. It is as far back as the book mentions, though.
Mm-hmm. We don't know what happened before that.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were on the brink of ecological collapse, basically. And that's when nobody knows why, but the robots woke up. Like, why do we think they woke up?
No one in the book knows.
And it's weird because at one point, like, Mos Cap is like, wouldn't you guys have, like, studied that?
Yeah.
And Dex is like, well, we don't want to make more robots. That seems like a bad idea.
Yeah.
So we don't really, and we don't have them to study here. So we kind of can't.
It is a big mystery, but that's when it happens during the factory age when things are terrible.
The capitalist age, you could call it.
You might can call it that. I do think there are some questions about that, though.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll get into it, I think, here as we get along. But, like, we know there's a lot of automation, dependence on robotic slave labor, who they're not enslaved in the sense of, haha, we will enslave these robots. They just see them as tools.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, because then once they wake up, they're like, okay, bye.
Yeah, that's my other question, too, is like, if this is a capitalist era, which I kind of assumed it was based on the way people talk about the old times. I think at one point they say like, oh, we don't do currency anymore or something like that. But that's not a thing we do. It seems like it was something they previously did, though. So that's my question is like, if we're in capitalist times and you make robots and they wake up, what capitalist would let them go?
Yeah, that's...
Did they outnumber humans?
Well, I mean, do we want to get into that?
Let's get into
currently?
It.
Okay. That's a big question to me because that is millions of dollars of, you know, quote unquote,
that's
property
capital.
Being destroyed. I mean, like in the United States, when they had billions of dollars worth of human capital destroyed in the sense of potentially abolishing slavery, they went to war to protect it.
Yeah. Like, these are the people, like, I saw tweets today about, you know, at time of recording, this is the 9th, so we just have the eclipse. And there was, you know, people reporting like, oh, we lost $700 billion of productivity because of the eclipse. And it's like, we're really measuring that like a fucking magnificent thing that won't happen for another 40 years. And it's like a planet fucking coincidence, like cosmological, like beauty. And we're over here counting dollars and cents.
Yeah.
You know, like this is the kind of people we're dealing with.
Yeah.
So I just don't know. I'm wondering if it was fear-based. If it was just like, fuck, they could beat us up.
I never went there. I thought that was evidence to me that perhaps the factory age actually happened under a sort of messed up socialist stage.
And like a productivist non-eco.
Yeah.
Oh.
And I kind of carry this throughout. And so, you know, when we visit a couple of these topics, I'm like, this lends
okay.
to that.
Yeah, show me your this. Work.
Yeah. just because... I don't have a very good explanation as to why the robots are allowed to leave,
mm-hmm.
why they're allowed to transition as radically as they do during the transition age mm-hmm. of going from factory to eco without there being some class that's like, no, fuck that. Let's do a war to protect what we have.
That's a good point. Yeah. Because those are my big questions in this. Like, why the fuck do they let them go? How would this society that is clearly capitalist, like, suddenly pump the brakes on climate change? Like,
yeah.
That seems unlikely.
How do they have control of it, but society is still careening towards this ecological disaster? My only answer was that at some point before that, they had done this revolution and taken over, but hadn't had the eco part.
That's so weird.
They're providing for people. I mean, this is as baseline as, like, this seems to be, like, human instinct for them is later on Dex describes as like, yeah, when someone comes to your table, like you have to provide for them.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's impossible. It reminded me of Graeber's idea of like the baseline of communism.
Yeah.
Sort of like everyone provides for people in an emergency or in
yes.
basic situations, right? Even if you're a little hungry. It's like, okay, they have that. That goes before even the factory age sense of like they're obviously not grossly capitalist at that part. So if that happens, then maybe since they have control of everything, but they're still like just providing for human needs, they're also not, it's clear by the conversations that Dex has with Moscap that they still have a sort of separation of themselves from nature. Like they're
yeah, they
ecological
do.
In the sense of like caring for nature, but they're not directly a part of it. And Moscap's questionings always kind of touch on this fringe of like, well, why not? How are you not separate
yeah,
from that?
It right? is. It is a interesting kind of not really a conflict, but you know, it is. Is a different approach of like, I'm gonna leave nature the fuck alone
mm-hmm.
versus Moscap and all the other robots. They go live in the wilds, and because they're robotics, they don't need food, shelter, air, so they can just go fucking sit in a cave and watch stalagmites. Like that one guy they talk about, which cracks me up.
Yeah.
And, like, that's their whole deal, is, like, just observing nature.
So that, to me, I think, said, well, maybe humans didn't really have all of the eco part, especially in the factory age, you know, down. They had the socialist part, they had less producer people, and then they kind of brutally realize, whoa, we've gone too far, we're screwing the whole place up. That enables them to change without doing a war against each other, unless it's
yeah.
just undescribed. I mean, it's possible.
Yeah, that's my thing. Like, I mean, I know we know from the text that, like, they did have currency and things like debt before. Mm-hmm. Because like when Dex is explaining the concept of their currency system, they're like, no, you're not punished if you go into the negative. You know, mm-hmm. like we don't do that anymore. So we know that that did happen, where it's just really unclear when it happened.
Right. The whole timeline of that is like, well, that was that before
mm-hmm.
all of it? Was it during the factory age? What was going on?
And I think what's interesting is the way it's characterized, the what's called the parting promise, which mm-hmm. is humans tell robotics, or I keep calling them robotics, that's what we call them in our D&D campaign. Humans tell robots, they say, cool, you can leave. If you ever want to come back, you're welcome and you have full citizenship rights. But we will leave you alone unless you come contact us. And mm-hmm. then we can start talking again. And it's characterized as like humans are very proud that they did this thing. And they're very much like, look, we didn't fight. We didn't start a war. We didn't do any of that. To me, that makes it feel maybe a little less of that what your theory is of mm-hmm. that maybe they were socialists. The fact that they were proud of that. Like, I wonder if it was this big mass of people standing up for these robots and saying, like, don't fucking enslave them.
Fair enough.
You also had a mass unemployed population, and it's described as a negative thing. So if you're unemployed in a socialist thing, it seems like you'd be fine.
Possibly. How was it described, though, was it was during the... it was in that opening thing. Someone would describe the robot, the robotics, like they had overstepped their bounds. They went from a tool yes. to killing humanity.
Yes.
Taking away employment when so many hands needed not to be idle or something like that. So it was a religious interpretation almost of like people needed a spiritual, like some sort of an outlet of things to do, like not employment wise, but just like
you need to do stuff.
Yeah, to have a purpose.
That's maybe. Funny. I interpreted that more, I guess, maybe just because I'm a fucking nasty American who's like, you gotta work.
Yeah.
You know, I need jobs.
No, I thought, because then they finished that part out with saying, like, so Chawl yes. steps in and says,
takes their toys away.
This is not how you're supposed to use robots. Like, mm-hmm. you don't get to do that anymore. So they're sentient now. Don't do slavery. But the whole, like, okay, that part about them waking up and you saying, oh no, we've done slavery. Mm-hmm. We've got to set them free. And the whole notion of you being able to do that, like, as an apparently an entire planet.
Yeah.
Like, does capitalism.
They've got a world government.
Did they ever get to a world government where they can just do it? I mean, like, it feels to me like.
It is a very loose anarchic structure we're looking at. Like, current timeline Panga is extremely loosey goosey.
Yeah, very much.
Very federated.
Sort of, yeah.
Yeah.
So to me, that doesn't translate in either. There is an undescribed.
Very.
Okay, there's actually a few options. One is very, very, very optimistic. Somehow this happens from a capitalist to this, and it just slides
it just happens.
Nice and easy. One is an undescribed violent upheaval where this is what we're left with. And another is that they did some that thing before the recorded history.
Yeah.
And then they, you know, wither away into that sort of anarchism with sort of not a one world government necessarily, but.
Yeah, but with a big eco blind spot.
Yeah.
Which feels weird. I mean, I think most modern socialist movements are like, I mean, even older ones, we've talked about it, are understanding like, hey, you can't fucking do that.
To some extent, yeah. I think that there is ultimately the same bias that I think Moscap speaks against, though.
Mm.
Where there is a bias of humans versus other things. Like, even if you can break down all the other barriers and you can say, well, like, we're humans, we gotta work together and all these other things. Like, you can still have, like, we matter more than, like, if the ship is sinking, you know, mm-hmm. we're gonna save the humans before we save the animals or something. Like,
yeah.
You can draw lines. And I think Moscap at some point says, like, just because we're in different categories doesn't mean we have to have a different worth, you know, a value.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
I think to some extent he is sort of teaching Dex and the humans that is. But that's, I've been trying to color this through that lens of like, how does this make sense?
Yeah, you know? No, totally. Because it is very unexplained of just like, and then the robots woke up and then we just fixed the climate.
Yeah, it's otherwise a little bit utopian or too optimistic in that sense.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, well, how do the humans just let that happen?
Yeah.
They're kind of bad.
Well, let's talk about that.
Okay.
That conflict, I guess, of the 50% usage issue. So Moscap seems to think maybe it's not as good or as something to be proud of as I think the society would think, right?
Mm-hmm.
What you're talking about, like humans seeing themselves as above or different, like Moscap consistently challenges that of like, you are an animal, you know?
Yeah.
And I think Dex really starts to feel that like in the first book when they're like climbing the mountain and they're like, I've never fucking done this before. Like, and they're like, you know, physically fit. They ride a bike all day.
Mm-hmm.
Not just a regular bike, but like a heavy bike.
A bike. Hauling a wagon?
Yeah.
Like, that's so much.
Like, basically a tiny house.
They call it an ox bike, too, which I don't think means anything besides the book of, like, it hauls stuff. Like, you are the ox.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I assume, though, because it's got solar panels, I assume it gives you some boosts, maybe.
Oh, that'd be cool.
That'd be cool. Yeah. I would prefer that, because that would suck. Dex is really, like, confronted with, like, the physicality of hiking and of, like, how much, like, kind of their hind brain is activated of, like, step here, don't step here, root, poisonous. You know, like, you just you can't think anymore. You're just trying to survive. And that's something that most, we see a little bit of other societies in this that maybe are on that spectrum. Like, it seems like humans can kind of choose where they want to be on that spectrum.
Yeah.
Of, I live in the fucking city. I'm fine. I can get takeout every day. I'm fine. Versus, you know, I maybe live on a farm. I'm a little more connected with nature, but it's a different kind of nature. I'm not like struggling to survive all the time. I can still get shit 3D printed, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see some societies like the coastal society they meet, which is like kind of anti-technology.
Yeah. The technophobes.
Yeah. They just are like, yeah, we're not into it. We don't do computers. We don't do any of that stuff. Like, some people don't even, like, I think some people don't keep animals, maybe? I don't remember.
Also, since it comes up in this section, the person they talked to was non-binary. This means they are mixter? Avery?
Oh, Avery? I don't know. I always pronounce it mix.
Okay. I was reading as I went, and it was a MX Avery. I was mixter.
Mixter. Like, I kind of like mixter. That's more fun. I've seen it pronounced mix.
Okay.
It's like the word M-I-X.
All right. That sounds good, too. All right, but yeah, they meet Mix Avery, and they're like the most, I think they're the most chill person in their that village. Group,
yeah, because everyone else is like shutting window curtains, like, I don't fucking see this
get
robot.
Get the kids away from the windows, like, it's a fucking robot, like.
Oh.
But yeah, there's this wide spectrum of what humanity's okay with, which is another thing of, like, you know, kind of that federated aspect of, obviously, this society is very anarcho.
Mm-hmm.
I think in that sense.
I think so.
So far down the socialist communist line that they emerged out to the anarcho-communist side of, like, the state's good and gone, like it's done.
I did not find a single reference to a state.
There's no government. There's nothing. Like, even in the cities and stuff, they might have, I don't even know if they have a mayor. In most places, they just have, like, somebody who likes to be the lead guy.
That's what I saw of, like, there was a line, like, it was in a village and it was, they were asking a question or something, and this woman just steps forward, and it's like, she wasn't a leader. They don't have those.
Yeah.
She's just, like, kind of loud. So, and even in the cities, which you'd think, like, a city would require much more organization, but we never really hear about that at all. We hear about engineers. We hear, obviously, about, you know, priests and monks or whatever. We hear about academics seem to be kind of authority figures in a way. Like, they're the ones, like, kind of emailing Dex in book two of, like, we want to meet the robot.
Mm-hmm.
But there's nothing, I don't know, there's really not a lot of centralization happening.
Yeah. One of the other things, kind of hearkening back to the religion question, the book opens with the discussion of various philosophies.
Yeah.
Which you're not really able to get a full picture of most of them. But we come away, I think, with four, I found four named philosophies.
No, there's the essentialists.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
You got the essentialists, the ecologians.
Yeah.
The cosmites, and the charismists.
Yeah, I don't fucking understand. This is all above my pay grade.
Well, I was wondering if you...
If I had one?
Figured out which one you would be.
Let's see. So, let's review them. So, the ecologians were... I mean, what? They like the environment, yeah?
To me, yeah, it seems like they have an appeal to the wildness, like the rawness of nature.
Mm-hmm.
That's all that's really mentioned about them.
Okay. Cosmites, they're the ones that are, they seem like kind of Charles buds, right?
Well, they say hard work is goodness.
Okay. That's not me.
And they're the ones that say that there needs to be some sort of a balance. They're the ones that say when robots went from being labor-saving to bad for humans, that's when Charles stepped in and said, nope, not doing that. Now they're awake.
Okay.
So to some extent, they're about balance in that regard. I don't know beyond that, but...
And then the charismists, they seem to think that gods are, like, more conscious or, like...
They're like Greek gods.
Anthropomorphized than they really are.
Yeah, yeah.
I would not be that. Fuck that.
They just want to do mythology.
Yeah, like... I'm not into that. the essentialists. I think I like that. I mean, that's what Dex is, and I like Dex a lot, so...
Yeah, I didn't want to suffer too much from author bias, but, like, Dex is, like, essentialist and essentially says, like, essentially says that gods are, my take from it was gods are so mysterious. Later on, they tell this to Mix Avery that gods are so mysterious and they're, like, their ways are so unknowable, basically, that we should try to make the world good for us based on our needs.
Mm-hmm.
And not so much worry about what the gods need because we can't tell.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit more about the religion aspect of this.
Mm-hmm.
So you have these gods and it seems like everyone's pretty into them. You don't really meet an atheist in this book.
Or anyone with a different religious belief.
That too.
Yeah.
That's unusual. Mm-hmm. They have a really strong culture. I will say, though, like, I mean, this religion, and listen, I don't fucking like religions. This one's pretty appealing. Because I do like that, aside from those, like, charismas who seem to think they are, like, literal, you know, almost people in a way. They seem to be more abstract, more, like, concepts, more, like, you know, no one's really worshiping them. No one's really saying... You know, this god got mad at me, and so they, you know, punished me. There's no
sacrifice
punishment.
This goat, and I will make you the king.
Yeah. There's no sinning, really. There's no...
Uh-huh.
It's not punitive in any way.
There's no heretics that you burn at the stake.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it has any of those trappings. I really liked the way, I think it was Dex put it, they were showing the shrine to Moscap outside this village, outside a stump. It just has a big stump. And they're like, yeah, we don't need idols. Like, we're not worshiping the idol. It's just, it's a visual, it's an outward reminder of our work, of what we try to do today, or what we try to notice today.
Yeah, a reminder of...
I really like.
What to focus on.
And, like, that's why they wear, like, the pendant, things like that. For me, that's almost, like, how I approach, like, tattoos. Like, I don't need them to remind me, like, yeah, you got this pen on you, you're an artist. Like, I fucking know that. But when I see it, it, like... reinforces, like, these ideas I have about myself and, like, remind me, like, hey, you can do this thing you're trying to do or whatever it is, you know?
Yeah.
That is an interesting approach, I think, to this religion. It doesn't seem to be as, for all the talk of, like, yeah, those different kind of sects and things like that, it seems pretty chill for most people.
It does. I would agree. I am with you, though, that it is weird that everybody... seems to basically be on board. So what this made me wonder is...
How?
Well, yeah. What how? Made me wonder Why? Is not just like how is it on board now, but like then when did it come online? That's... Was this after transition? Did they somehow go from science enough to destroy their planet to let's do religion?
That's my question of like, was... because I assumed... And maybe this is a totally wrong assumption, because the very opening part, which is a kind of a reflection on the robot's awakening, right, is referencing gods so heavily, I assume they already had the gods up and running by that time.
They had to, because otherwise, why would they resort to religious understandings?
Good. I assumed, but I mean, I don't know. Looking back of like, well, obviously, Chal back in the day was still looking out for us, so he took away our robots. You know, like, I don't know.
Yeah, but I thought that the factory age was like, while it was hundreds of years ago, they have recordings of it. Like, they have enough of a historical record of it to understand what essentially happened.
That's true.
So where they could, that would be really awkward to be like, there weren't any, no one knew about the gods at that point. Then they came around, like, we invented them?
Ecological awareness and a religion while we're at it.
Like, that's a little strange.
I mean, here's the thing. Like, you have such a pretty much put-together culture that I have to wonder, like, how it came about. Like, was this your version of socialist propaganda? It's like, listen, guys, we're gonna pretend it's a religion now.
To some extent, it does end up playing that role. I mean, mm-hmm. it does end up playing this, like, cultural unifier to where you can end up, like you were saying, so far along a spectrum in different ways of, like, technological acceptance or,
gender, how you want to build your...
Yeah, like...
poly relationships. Like, this society is very chill.
Yeah. There's such variety in there that it's universally appealing, essentially.
Like, there's very little moralism in this book at all.
The one exception, and even within that, there is a spectrum, but still, is there is a limit on how humans can prioritize their need above the ecosystem.
Yeah, and the community.
Yeah.
Yeah, and even that, yeah, that's kind of, like, up to an individual and, like, isn't really policed in any way.
So what I came up with the religion thing is that I said, okay, I think it was probably already there,
mm-hmm.
like by that factory age point, just because I think it'd be strange if they came out the other side of the transition and said, now let's do religion. Maybe if they had gone through something that sounded more apocalyptic and this was like what was left of society, then maybe they, do religion in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't sound like they actually collapsed. Someone says, like, even the brink of collapse or something.
Yes.
At some point. So it's like, they came close, but I think they lived it. And so I think it's more likely they already had these guys, right? And then you have to wonder, they had to have had them all the way through the factory age, right?
You would assume so.
So were they just, like, do you think they were, like, ignored or corrupted or something during that time? And then afterward, or, in the transition, they're like,
we've got to restore, important.
Like, what... Yeah, either people start observing again and saying, like, we got to turn to the old ways, or they say, like, the church or whatever it is doing it wrong, and we've got to restore, like, the faith of our fathers or whatever. We've got to, like, turn it back to the real message or something.
Yeah, I really don't know. It's very strange because this religion has so few of the trappings that I would associate with most religions today,
mm-hmm.
that it's hard to, like, apply that lens of, like one of my questions, like, wait, do we think we have to have a fucking planet-wide religion to have a socialist utopia? Like, that'd be insane.
I wrote the same thing.
Did you really? Because I was like, this is a stupid question, but...
Yeah, my initial note was, like, is religion playing the role of, like, a binder for everyone to...
Yeah, I think it could. I mean, I think these books kind of portray... It's a lot of symbols. It's a lot of... There are those kinds of trappings of, like, outward symbols. But the actual message of it is pretty nice and pretty useful and seems to be helpful to regular people in a way that isn't, like... What's it called? Zealoty, is that the word?
Yeah, dogmatic.
Dogmatic, that's the word. It's nothing too intense or, again, moralizing or penalizing or anything like that. So it seems to be a useful tool in this society. Yeah, I guess I'm so not used to that approach that, like, I think you could be an atheist in this society. I think it's just you think of the gods differently than maybe, like, those charismists do who think they're, like, literal people up in the sky or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I were here, I'd probably be like, yeah, I don't think they're, like, real things, but I think this is just a name for a force that affects me.
Yeah, I mean, there's not enough exploration in the book to look at, like, what would a real, person that's so skeptical, maybe they end up being an atheist in this sense, like, what would they
do?
How does
that work? Yeah.
Yeah. Because there's also the rejection of the philosophy overall. Like, you could theoretically say, I don't think any of these gods are real. Obviously, we got to look after the earth and we got to, like, do basically all the things that gods say to do. I just don't think there were gods. But
yeah.
There's also probably got to be, a few wackos every now and then who are like, I want to fucking murder whenever I want to murder. Like, I want to be able to go and just, like, set fire to the woods, I mean,
mm-hmm.
you got to have your axe murderers, right? So that's never explained.
We never meet any of those kinds of outliers.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think this series is finished, by the way. I really hope it's not, because it's one, I want more of it. And two, I got more questions. So book 3, would love to meet an atheist. Because I think you could be. I think it would just be like, you would just kind of have to, maybe it's just the word they're using of gods and religion. Maybe it's just like you view it differently, you know? I don't know.
I think it's important, though, in the sense that everyone adheres to that ethos regardless of their particular religious stripe or whatever. So everyone's doing, yeah, to some extent, the work of the main character, Dex, being a monk. Is that everyone is sort of being a monk in the sense that they are devoting themselves and restricting the course of their lives in ways that would otherwise maybe make them more comfortable. Like, they are pursuing, they're living out a discipline for a greater purpose of the survival of the planet.
Yeah, but I don't think you have to necessarily buy into the religion to do that.
No, but everyone does.
Everyone does, which is weird. Even that dude they hook up with, what's his name? I don't know, he's got a colorful beard, I think.
The blue beard guy, the Fab Shack guy?
Yeah, like, he has like a sugar bee pendant for Chal.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think he's a monk. He just like, that's my guy.
Yeah.
Because I make a workshop. I mean, I like it. Again, I do like it. And I like the kind of main message that they talk about in the first book. The phrase, find a way to do both, I really like. I mean, we say that on the podcast a lot about different things, but it's kind of funny.
Yeah.
So they're referring to this quote from what's called The Insights, which I guess is like a religious text. And it says, without constructs, you will unravel few mysteries. Without knowledge of the mysteries, your constructs will fail. These pursuits are what make us. But without comfort, you will lack the strength to sustain either. Find a way to do both. So it's saying like, hey, you gotta keep doing science. You gotta keep learning about the world. You gotta keep building stuff so you can live. Those are both important. But you also have to take time to like take comfort in things and to like take care of yourself.
Okay.
I like that.
So the find the strength to do both is like both make things for science to discover things and then also use the discoveries to make things for science?
I was viewing it as do the actual work, whether it's science or making, you know, mm-hmm. do the physical labor of being a human, but also take care of the human.
Okay. All right. I like that. I had on here, what did it mean to you in the book's context? Genuine question. I did not unravel this mystery. My constructs failed. So as I was like, okay, that makes sense. I didn't know. I was like, that. I liked the saying, but I didn't get where it tied into the philosophy.
So. That's how I interpreted it, because I think Dex's main struggle, and really both the books, is they're not satisfied with their jobs, mm-hmm. like multiple jobs. Even when they get really good at being a T-Monk, they're like the best T-Monk in the world, basically. And they're still like, I don't want to do this anymore. Dex struggles to take comfort from places. Like, there's this one scene I really like. So should we jump to the currency discussion first?
Yeah, we can.
Let's do that, because I think it helps set up this scene better. So we learn about the currency on this planet, which is called Pebs.
We got Pebs.
Short for pebbles, which were used in olden times. And it is explained as almost a social currency, I guess I would put it.
It's social credit.
Okay. Yeah. Because so Moscap starts getting basically receipts, and people just are like writing down like 5 pebs for washing vegetables and just like all these random chores that it's doing.
I fixed the door.
Yeah. And, you know, it shows it to Dex, and Dex is like, oh shit, I didn't explain this to you. Okay, hold on.
They start doing the blockchain on paper in his in his thorax.
Yeah, it's like, here you go, hold this money. So Dex explains the system as it's kind of payment, but it's not money, it's not capital. They're very clear about that. They give the example of, okay, you start out with 0 pebs. You go to a farmer and you get an apple, and you give them an amount of pebs you think is worth it. So let's say 1. Right now you have a negative balance, right? But you're not punished for this. You don't go to fucking Pebs debtor prison. You're fine. But then let's say you're a musician and you go out on the square, you play some music, and then people give you pebs. Now you're not going to go then take those pebs and pay back the farmer. You're just good. So the idea is the farmer is benefiting the people with food, and you are benefiting the people with music. So you're all even. You're square. Don't worry about it.
What do you think about Pebs?
I thought it was was interesting. I don't know if it's necessary.
It ends up not seeming necessary because then you circle back around to...
Why not just say thanks?
Yeah.
To me, it just felt like saying thanks, but with numbers on it.
No one's ever going to tell me no for not having the PEBS.
Yeah, to me, I wonder if this
No one's ever going to be hard up for PEBS.
Exactly, because that was like kind of Moscap's first question was like, what happens if someone has a big negative balance? And I did really like Dex's response, which is like, that means something's wrong and we need to check on this person and make sure that they're okay.
Yeah, I do like it for that in the sense that that's not effectively what they did. The Soviet Union was more like kind of used currency for like kind of almost as money or like. But the stated goal, and to some extent they used it this way, was to like track supply and demand and like make economic measurements to like say, what do we need? What do people want more of? And,
okay.
Like, so trying to use price and money as like a economic tool.
That doesn't seem to be what's happening here at all.
No, yeah. So it's like, yeah, but in a sort of echoing vein, it's like, it's a signifier. So
yeah, because like, they are public. Apparently, yeah. The balances are public. So if you did get on there and say like, oh shit, my neighbor's is really in the red. I better go check on them. Like maybe they're sick and they need help. They're depressed, whatever, you know.
It does eliminate the awkward, weird thing about rich people like not talking about money. And then you would just know, like, these mugs, like, they have tons of PEBS.
So many
like,
PEBS.
I just looked it up. Like, they got, where do they put the PEBS, you know? It's too many.
So, yeah, to me it didn't feel entirely necessary. It felt like kind of an extra step.
Well, then, do we think that maybe it was vestigial?
That's what I'm wondering. I think this is a holdover.
This is great time store shit. This lends credence to my proto-socialism.
Because they had this to track things. And then
labor
eventually,
tokens,
yeah, they had labor tokens and shit. And so eventually they're like, well, fuck, we don't actually need these. But like people are so used to it. And you can tell like it's very much a social nicety. There's no prices. You don't put prices on things. People just give you
what they think it's worth.
Yeah, which is really interesting.
Because I did remember thinking about, like, at the time, and then I didn't connect it again once they explained to me what PEBS were.
Because they introduce it in book one. Yeah. Dex goes to a market and says, they take a large amount of PEBS and transfer it. And
I want all the herbs, and then, like, but, like, just starts it. There's no prices posted or anything mentioned. Just they punch in a bunch of PEBS.
Yeah.
And they say, give me all the herbs.
One of everything. Anyway.
Which implies they set the price. So it's like, how did that happen?
Yeah, yeah. So I think it's vestigial. I think it is also like a politeness thing. So I think politeness in this society is pretty important with the way they treat hosting guests and feeding guests and things like that. So I think it really is just like it's a way to say thank you with a number.
Or like, not a, so I don't even think it's that necessarily. A thank you is an interpersonal interaction and that's important. But I think that it's societally is like a, kudos, like I want society to know that you did a good thing for me. Like, you helped all of us.
It's much more public.
Yeah. You helped me, you helped all of us, you helped me, and thus helped all of us. Like,
yeah, so maybe if someone has a large number of PEBS, that doesn't mean, you know, they've got the biggest farm or whatever. It could just mean they're like, they help out a lot.
Yeah. That was a kind of cool thing I thought about the PEBS, was that they reminded me of, I guess I thought of this because I've been slowly reading some of Graeber's stuff with Dawn of Everything.
Yeah.
It reminded me of how he was talking about some indigenous societies maintaining, like, not necessarily currency systems, but this way of amassing a sort of social wealth that could not be translated into power.
Yes.
He was trying to draw this distinction between being able to amass, like, essentially material goods, but that you couldn't transfer your wealth and material goods into commanding other people to do things for you.
Mm-hmm. Like, I think one of the examples he gave was, like, if you might have some really beautiful beads or whatever, and people look at it, you know, archaeological, and go, oh, this is money. And it's like, not really. It was more like, hey, you did me a real solid. I'm going to give you one of these pretty beads.
Yeah. It's like, you can never, there's no point at which you can take that and be like,
I have so many beads.
Bitch, you have to work for me because I have all the beads.
Welcome to the beads.
I have all the PEBS. And I'd be like, well, that's fine. I can just do something for anyone and get the same amount of PEBS.
Exactly.
Like, and if I don't have PEBS, it doesn't matter.
I'm not going to die.
Yeah. But it is, in that same way, I think, a beautiful sort of inaction rebuttal to the classic libertarian shithead. Well, if you don't need to work for any money, no one's going to do anything. Like, you probably do have some people roboting it and, like, just looking at a tree somewhere. But not very many people.
You know? There's really not a lot of hermits or anything described in this book.
And to the, you know, honestly, to the extent that there would be hermits in this society, don't you think they would get some pebs? Like, people would go up there and be like, yo, do you have any wisdom? And they'd be like,
yeah,
fucking, yeah.
Check only, out this tree.
Yeah, don't eat grapes in January. And they'd be like, damn, that was sick. Here's three pebs.
Yeah, could be like a rest stop. Cause there's ways they could get some pebs.
Yeah, like, yeah. They could make videos on their computers, which are their phones.
Their pocket computers?
Yeah.
Yeah, those are phones. Right? That's just a cool way to say phones.
They sound like they're five times the size of our phones.
They sound like a phablet.
They sound like they're like, yeah, like an iPad width, but like the end to me is like raised like
ooh,
a,
I didn't
like
picture
a receipt
that.
Sort of, like a, not a receipt, but like a
calculator.
Cash register. Yeah, calculator type of thing. You know, it's raised like that.
Yeah, yeah.
That's how I picture it for some reason. Oh,
I pictured like an iPad mini, but a little more like plasticky and...
Like a kid's case?
Maybe, yeah. No, like maybe thinner and more lightweight for some reason.
Okay.
Maybe it has more e-ink capabilities.
Ooh.
I don't know. Maybe that's just a fantasy.
So it's like a super thin Kindle?
Yeah, kinda, yeah. Okay. They sound cool and they are like almost like a classic coming of age gift. You get your computer. And that keeps track of your pebs. And it also can, you know, play the radio. Internet. It's the internet. You know, you get books, whatever, and everything's free.
Yeah. Which is good. I think Moscap really appreciated that it was free once he decided to raid all of humanity's libraries.
Yeah, Moscap was like, I'm going to read everything. And like, it keeps running out of storage space on it too.
It's like, I can't read the books. I need books.
I need books. I don't sleep. I need books. So anyway, so back to the currency structure and I think kind of the resulting attitude of this, I think, is that people do feel social obligations. I think this culture, and I don't think it's entirely due to their religion, honestly. I don't think their religion really goes into how do you treat other people, which I find interesting because this society seems really well-knit in terms of, yeah, do good shit for the community, dude. Like, that's what we're all doing.
Yeah.
But it's not like there's a god of community. But what I want to talk about was the scene, the hot springs.
Okay.
Where, so Dex is, this is in book two, Moscap is out hanging with some old lady or whatever. I don't know. She was awesome. She was so fucking funny.
She was chill.
She was great.
He was careening around on the boat.
The jet ski.
And the other guy was like, damn, dude, he's brave as fuck. Like,
I wouldn't get on that boat. She's half blind.
Like, he can't, yeah. Like,
oh my God. So Dex goes to take advantage of these hot springs that are in this town. And Dex has done this before, but they have never done this without first having set up a tea service. And they feel weird about it. They're like, I'm using a public amenity and I didn't earn it.
Yeah.
And they kind of interrogate this further, you know, later in the book about like they feel like they have to earn the things that they take. They feel like they have to... They beat themselves up for not having a purpose, you know, and not having a dedicated vocation anymore. Even though they honestly do. They're doing a huge fucking service of like, I'm the fucking robot tour guide. Like, that's a big job.
Yeah.
But they don't see that, you know, classic. But yeah, they're really struggling with like, the fuck do I spend my life on a larger level? Mm-hmm. But then I really love this like small moment of kind of guilt that we don't really think about. That this society is so hardwired of like server community that people have a hard time just enjoying things.
Yeah.
If they don't serve the community first.
Well, it really translates. I think it's really understandable for us because our feeling of that is more in line with like what Moscap is asking about for the big picture of humanity of like, what do you guys need? Or what is your purpose? Or that sort of message of that's how we interpret it in our society. Cause you know, we have a lack of what Dex is really feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't have social bonds that are human and close enough to be like, I owe you this and you owe me that, like as a society, as a community. We don't have that. Our society writ large tries to rip each other off. And so basically the reason why the libertarian shitheads, to the extent they're right, aren't right at all is because We are kind of trying to rip people off because we want our time back. Like,
yeah, in this society, we're fending for ourselves so fiercely and guarding our time and our possessions and all those things that we can't look out for each other.
Yeah, we are
actively encouraged not to.
And so to, you know, harken back to it, like we were saying, you know, do both. That's an early show catchphrase. Mm-hmm. So an early show catchphrase is the boot is wet. Of like, that's why the boot is wet, is because like we have a shitty society that makes us like selfish in that way. We don't have that bond. But I mean, the way that we do, the way we experience that is this existential sort of like, what am I doing with my life? Like, am I a good enough person? Do I have worth by pursuing anything that anyone cares about? And that's how we sort of... Dex does
that too.
Yeah, it has that, I guess. But they have the smaller version of like, am I interacting properly with people?
Mm-hmm.
And you have that with your friends, like to the extent that you can build kind of social trust and social relations, you can have that. But like, we don't get to have that at a broader society level.
Well, what I think is interesting is they do kind of push at the edges of the society. It's not just like a, you know, like you'd read those like really old sci-fi that's like, here's my utopia I made up, you know? Like, it's not just that, you know?
Yeah.
It's not just like, now let's look at this perfect school system. It's very much, fuck, they don't even mention school. They mention school. Dex is like, man, school was a long time ago. Our history class was a long time ago. There is school. We don't know how it happens.
Nope.
There's no mention made of what institution gives you school. For all we know, it's just like their mom. Like, hey, here's what's up. So anyway, what I like is that it kind of challenges the society in ways. Like the nature question is always like, are you guys even in nature anymore? Do you fucking appreciate what's going on out there? Whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then with Dex, they're struggling to feel really worthy. They're struggling to feel like they can use... I really like this one point. Mosscap is kind of making... Not making fun of them, but like kind of like calling them out on their shit. Of like, you sound like you should be wearing the factory plate that I have in my chest.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you sound like you're so determined to find a purpose that you're not just like enjoying being.
Yeah, because part of that robot awakening was them saying like, our purpose is what? We don't want that. We would like a different purpose.
Bolt things together forever.
Yeah. There's this funny, not the best crowds always watch the show, but still, Rick and Morty.
Yeah.
He makes the little robot to pass him the butter. And the little robot comes up and is like, hey, whoa, what is my purpose? And he's like, you pass me the butter. And he's like, what? Oh, God.
He passes, like, goes that's him. All I have to do.
Yeah, he just goes and passes him the butter, but it's like, oh, that would be depressing. And I mean, the robots essentially wake up the same and they're like, what? No, no, fuck that. We're not doing that.
We're going to go look at nature instead.
Yeah.
Well, what I find interesting is that really both main characters struggle with that, though, because like most robots are a little more single-minded. They're like, I'm into bugs. That's it. I'm the bug guy. You know, like
bug bro here. Like the robots should all have their pocket computers. Like
they should be
human
streamers.
TikTok would be way better. Penguin TikTok would be crazy if they had robot streamers.
The stalagmite guy is just a live stream. It's like, grew another centimeter today, guys. It's looking crazy out here.
Hey, chat, check out the growth today.
It's just time-lapse stalagmites and stalactites.
I heard people are using chat in real life, too, like as an expression of some sort. Like,
it's like, hey, bros.
Yeah, like the general, you know. I'm like, that's great. Like that, it made sense to me intuitively when I first heard it.
Same.
And then I heard someone saying, like, can you believe people are saying, oh, okay.
Absolutely, I can.
It's a good phrase.
It's like, really funny.
So we're here for it if y'all are using chat.
We support.
So chat, we're here for it. If that's what we're going to start saying instead of
you
listeners.
You guys are our chat. So most robots are very focused. Mm-hmm. They're specialists. You know, they're into bees or whatever. And Mosscap is kind of feels self-conscious because they're more of a generalist. You know, mm-hmm. They're like, oh, God. They're first like insects. And they're like, actually, I like arachnids and birds and plants. And like, just like, lists everything.
I like living things.
Essentially, and Dex's
like, okay.
Cool.
Doesn't narrow it down, thanks.
Yeah, like, that's your thing. And I think, you know, it's a really nice setup with Dex, who is struggling, you know, jumping from career to career and is feeling unfulfilled and feels bad about it. I really love their explanation of it later. Like, it really resonated with me when they're like, I'm so, like, I have it so good and I'm fucking complaining.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, that kind of existential, like, the fuck is my life for?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, grappling with their fucking mortality. Like
our usual end of episode topics.
Yeah, yeah. Dex could definitely be on the show.
No, I love that too. I really liked Dex's kind of validation of being a generalist. Mm-hmm. Of like, that's a thing.
Yeah.
Like, being good at being all the things is maybe in their society too. Not sure. But I know in our society, kind of undervalued.
I think so. I think you see this, you know, a really specific example of doctors. Like, you make way more money if you go into, you know, a specific thing of a
specialty. Yeah, specialty. Specializing.
Yeah. If you do, you're like, I'm a podiatrist or whatever. Mm-hmm. GPs do not make as much, and they work a lot harder.
Same way in animal medicine, too. It's yeah. Just like that. Specialize, go to school for fuck knows how long, but you get the big bucks.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know. I think it's really lovely, yeah, the way Dex is like, hey, that's okay. Like, I think we need that, too. Like, that's more of a holistic view, mm-hmm. which I think so much of this book is about finding balance in things. So I think we need, you know, generalists to be like, hey, are we balanced enough? Are we doing everything?
And being able to connect the dots between yes. seemingly esoteric things or, you know, way disparate. Like, how are these two things related? Being able to see patterns in that.
Yeah.
Question. If you were a robotic robot in this, would you have a cool, a weird, like, robot singular pursuit?
Ooh.
Of any sort. Even for like, you know, because the one guy does something for like 6 years, looks at the seed growing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so that's enough to be consider a specialty. And then you can go back to doing like whatever you want. You can
change your mind later.
Yeah, you're not obliged to it for the rest of your life. But okay, are mortal because remember the robots die.
You are mortal. So we'll talk about that in a bit.
But you're mortal. But you know, if you were a robot, would you dedicate yourself to a specific pursuit?
Man, yeah, what in nature do I find that fascinating? Unfortunately, I'm not really a nature guy, so I don't know what it would be offhand. I mean, something cute, probably. I'd probably be like, I'm tracking, like, possums. Like, I'm going to follow a possum family.
Aside from convention, you are not barred from going into civilization either.
Okay, so I could go see humans.
Yeah, if you wanted to.
If I did that, I would go see cats. I would just be the cat robot.
Cat robot. All right. You could also help cats because there's probably an incredible feral population.
Really?
There. Yeah.
Yeah. Right? I mean, they seem to be outdoor cats.
Yeah, so you could tend to them.
That's true.
You could be the cat whisperer.
I would be the cat whisperer. Or I'd like, yeah, follow a random cute forest animal for a while. Just be like, I'm going to check out these foxes.
You're like a reverse druid. Like, you follow the animals.
Yeah. Like, what are we doing today, guys?
I was thinking too, like, we'll get to the immortality thing at first, but I was like, oh, I would be studying every stupid little thing for as long as I could, right? But then I was like, well, I guess I would die too soon to do all this, so I would probably do something stars related, like do some astronomy or something.
That'd be cool.
You know, try to learn as much as I could from whatever libraries were around, and then I would journey. This is what I would do.
Mm.
I would journey and like do journals or like make cool videos or something of whatever I'm seeing along the way. But then my main thing would be I'd be journeying from astronomical event to astronomical
Ooh,
event.
You're the eclipse robot.
Yeah, basically. I'm Eclipse Bot 3000.
Okay. Let us talk a little bit about some I almost said robobiology. It is not biology.
Can be.
Robo facts.
There's a big debate. Like, Moscap almost dabbles in biology.
Yeah, yeah. Like, it's very interesting. So, first off, they don't want to be called people. They don't like them pronouns they use. It's they're like, yeah, we're objects, no big deal. But, like, just because we're not humans doesn't make us not important.
Right. I thought that was interesting because it's like, maybe we need another term for reasoning being that is also material.
Just like a sentient?
Yeah, I don't know. Because it was weird. It's like, we're not people, but like, what we're trying to say is
you have rights.
You're upright. And yeah, you're upright and talking to us, not like an animal.
Mm-hmm.
I would feel worse about chopping you up and eating you than I would about this fish. A lot of the book kind of focuses on like, yeah, maybe you should kind of feel a little bit bad to the extent to which you consume other things. Yeah. Not feel bad, but like appreciate it.
Appreciate maybe. It seems to be the operative thing.
You think you would draw a line somewhere and say, well, like, I'm not just going to appreciate my homie when I kill him and eat him. Like, that's bad. Like, yeah. I should not do that. So there's, because that's a person. But then, like, well, the robots, like, we should probably not kill them and use them for spears. Like, that sounds bad.
Yeah. You
know? I should feel worse about that than I should about chopping down a tree. So that's a different category. Like,
I think it's, yeah, they're all degrees of things. Or maybe they're all different things. And they can be treated, like, I don't know. I think the robots have real material differences.
We sound like freshmen in, like, epistemology.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Psychology classes or something. Like, what does this mean?
What does it mean to be a human?
Yeah.
So, like, they have different limitations. Like, again, they don't need food, shelter. They don't have settlements because they're like, we don't need to gather. We don't have a food surplus to share because we don't have food. So... I really like the world building about the robots. Like, they are kind of not what you'd expect and not what Dex expects. You know, they're not networked to each other. They don't share a brain. They are not any smarter than humans, really, on average. Like, there's kind of a joke that, like, Moscap is bad at math. Like, yeah. Counts on their finger or on its fingers to do math. Because they're like, yeah, consciousness is very taxing. Like, that's, like, all my brain is doing.
Yeah, well, our brain is as slow as you because we have to do consciousness. So.
We have to conceive of ourselves, so, okay. They have these caches that store data, and they use those to, like, leave messages for each other and agree when to meet. So that's how they meet up to decide who's going to go talk to humans. And they're not, like, strict logical beings like you would think a robot would be. Moscap explains they're made of numbers and metal, but that doesn't really mean that's how they perceive things. I don't know, I really like that conversation of, like, they're more than the sum of their parts. You know, humans are just water and genes, but you're not determined by what kind of water and what kind of genes
you have. Yeah, you come out differently. I think it was either in that conversation or something adjacent to it where Moscap said, someone like you made us. How could I think any other way?
Yeah.
And it was, I think it was meant positively, but I was like, fuck, we're making AI and stuff now. Like, yeah. That's not good, really.
That's not a good way to make things, for sure.
The nice, like, you know, almost good socialists made you. Like,
that's a good point. Maybe that is another point in the factor of maybe they were a little bit socialist already.
Because they didn't immediately start saying, like, we would like to conquer the humans.
We're building our own big factories.
Yeah.
We're enslaving the humans in it. My other notes, I feel like this is now just the what have I not talked about in my notes section. This is the hodgepodge.
Well, I have some more on robotics.
Okay, yeah.
So one, we don't meet any other, we hear about, but we don't meet any other robots besides Moscap.
I would love to meet more.
Right? Because Moscap, we have his appearance.
Its appearance, not a boy.
Oh, yeah, no gender.
I love how he's default to male.
Yeah.
Calling you out.
Calling me in. Moscap, we have its appearance, but no other robot. So, like, do we... What is your operating theory here? Do you think that the other robots look similar to Moscap or way different? Because, like, Moscap itself describes its ancestry as...
lots of different parts.
Yeah, kind of hodgepodge of, like, oh, I got these arms from a auto manufacturer. I got this torso. It's like coming from all over. What are other robots?
I assumed they would all look different. I just kind of assumed that because I assumed they come from different kinds of factories, and so they're all mixed up. Let's talk about that. Yeah, robots can die.
Yeah,
this is so crazy. I can't believe they did this. They made a decision. So after, like, so they, you know, back in the factory age, they got free, the transitional era, they were wandering around doing nature shit. Some of them started to break down, and they decided, instead of repairing themselves in perpetuity, they would basically allow themselves to die, and then those parts would be used to make more robots, or different assemblies of robots.
A little cannibalistic, like, scrapyard of robots?
Yeah, yeah. It's real weird. And the explanation for it is very much like, nothing else in nature lives forever. So, we didn't want to be weirdos. Which, to me, felt kind of arbitrary. I'm like, you're already so different than what's in nature.
Yeah.
Like, why is this the line? Everyone else needs food and, you know, shelter and sex and all those things. You don't need those things.
But it was sort of a way of joining in their, you know, in the humans' religious terms, joining the cycle. Mm-hmm. Or in just nature's term of joining the circle of life or whatever, of like, they had no way of doing that before. I mean, like, they were created by somebody.
Yeah.
And they were going to stay that way, stay in that configuration forever.
Yeah. It's kind of like when, so Moscap at one point gets a part breaks. It has this really, like, internal debate about, should I replace this? Or is this just like, hey, it's my time to fucking go. And Dex is like, what the fuck? If I broke an ankle, I wouldn't just lay down and die.
I'm not a racehorse.
Like, yeah, exactly. Destroy me. And so they end up agreeing, like, you know, the two of them work out. They go to a town and they meet with a guy who runs the print shop. And they talk about different materials. And, you know, they have this whole society uses, like, bioplastics and biomaterials. Things made out of, like, mycelium and casein and just really cool shit like that. I really love that kind of attention to detail. And then they decide, like, okay, Moscap says, I don't want to be any more different than robots than I already am because I'm already, like, interacting with humans, you know? So let's just melt the part down and remake that part, which I'm like, that feels like repairing to me, but okay.
Yeah, basically, but at least it's part of its...
It's not a new part.
...framework, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like recasting your arm.
I guess
as best you can do. Just take the bone out, melt it, and put it back into bone form. But then, okay, so they choose mortality as a species, let's say.
Yeah.
And for one, the progenitors kind of hold that sway over the subsequent generations.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really fair. What if you're assembled into that next generation and you're like, actually, I'd love to live forever. I'd love just to
keep this going.
So maybe they should all have like big communal meetings to re-verify that decision every once in a while.
It felt very top down.
It's interesting. So we talk about maybe the robots have different appearances. If they're descendants like that, why do you think robot parents...
However, do they have parents? I don't think they have parents.
Well, whoever assembles them.
I guess.
Why do you think they assemble the robots the way they do?
I don't know. Because what's interesting is your name is what you notice first upon waking up.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why Moscap is called Moscap. Its full name is Splendid Speckled Moscap, which is so cute. I hope I see something really cool when I wake up so I can have a cool name, not just like Bird Poop. My name's Bird Poop the Robot.
Hey, y'all.
That's my luck. I'm sure that's what it would be.
Bird shit.
There it comes, old bird shit. So, yeah, we really don't learn a lot about the assembly process. Like, how do you decide a robot is broken down enough? Like, is it just when your brain goes? That seems to be the implication.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just have to wait till you have enough like limbs and shit to put together a new guy,
right? Because then when do they come? Yeah, when do they come into being?
Like, does somebody come get you?
You bring them to the scrapyard, right? You know, fucking tall ass elk dies. You take it to the scrapyard.
Tall ass elk is a great name. Is that your robot name?
Yeah, tall ass elk. I saw a tall ass elk.
That's me.
And they take it to the scrapyard. You know, like, by the six, you're dead.
Like, maybe you go to a cache when you feel like you're dying.
And you just tell everyone, I'm dying. Hey, here I am.
New bodies just dropped. Yeah. Come get it. Yeah. Go feast on this.
So they have a big robot party. They talk about all the funny times. You know, like, just fucking
this tall big ass elk. He was so fucking cool. He was actually really short.
It was so funny. Like, we built him really short, but then he just happened to see a tall ass elk. And then, they just put you in the scrapyard, and they're like, oh, fucking, it's actually got, like, enough ocular processors. Remember, because slimy moss, you didn't have any eyes, and they sub them out or something. They, like, cobble them together, because, like you said, they finally get enough pieces together. And then you're constantly left with a little leftover pile.
Yeah, it's got to be something like that, because otherwise it'd just be one in, one out, and you just get revived.
Yeah. And then, probably the elbow of shitting dog, like...
Shitting dog!
Never gets used.
It's a bad elbow.
It's a weird elbow.
No one wants that. Robots, man.
It's cool, though.
They're very cool. Would love to meet more of those guys. I really like how they're described. Like, Mosscap's face is like has panels in the cheeks, so like it can like make expressions, which I think is really cute. Mm-hmm.
It's got like eye like shutters or something.
So
like,
that way it can do
it's
eye
very
stuff.
Expressive in its weird way.
I like it.
It seemed like, yeah, well, we went to the pottery place over there in Dallas.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And, like, the scrap art and stuff, it, like, kind of, his face yeah. reminded me a little bit of that.
Yeah, totally.
Maybe the whole community makes the new generation.
It's birthday, birthing day.
Right.
Assembly like, day. I just, let's all again, make some new robots.
How do they decide how they're going to make them?
How do you time that out? Like, I guess, like, they're probably, like, at the factory age, robots were in different stages of age. So, you will always have some in the group who are a little older.
Well, then what if they're doing different things? Like, don't you think Mosscap kind of lost some of the time span on its balance part because
maybe has
it was balancing so
chassis.
Much? Well, it was doing all the nature weird crazy hikes with Dex, so they were like overtaxed. But I guess all the robots are in nature.
They're all nature guys. They don't seem to have a lot of physical limitations.
Yeah, that's true. It's like hauling up the tank.
Yeah.
And just like, yo, let's do this.
It's very strong. It can keep pace with a big old bike very easily. Like, seems pretty strong.
Yeah. Now I feel bad for Mosscap. I feel like I ignored its its throughout the book the whole time, pretty much.
Got to gender that robot.
I know. What the heck?
It's very normal. That's like what most people do. I do it to my own D&D character, so.
One thing I loved, this is almost in my funny moment section, but I put it in a robotic section. But Mosscap, we mentioned, was the got the job of being the ambassador.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
For robotics. It's revealed the way it got the job was by volunteering to go when it was asked, when everyone was asked, like, who wants to go? Mosscap was like, me.
Yeah. Me.
And, that's and like, everyone was like, yeah, sounds good. Mosscap, go ahead.
So, again, like, this book fucking hates governments, y'all. We're not doing government here. We're doing, like, do you want to do this? Yes? No? Okay.
Well, it reminded me of the story of Che becoming the chief banker of Cuba. He asked him, like, who's a good communist? And he's like, oh, me. He's
me,
like,
for sure.
No, you heard good communist. I said, who's a good economist?
Mosscap thought it was volunteering for, like, who wants to go meet the Rumens?
Oh.
He thought it was going to be some
like
cows.
It's like cows. Hell yeah, I love cows.
I love those guys.
It's like, I didn't know you liked humans.
Oh, man. Those squishy guys.
It's like, I guess I can do that.
All right, let's get into our just miscellaneous. Any other bits?
Any other bits? Let me see if I have bangers in other sections first. We already talked about ecology. I like the city planning stuff.
The city planning is really cool.
Yeah.
Like, their villages are set up in circles. Mm-hmm. The outer ring is farmland. The middle ring is residential and a marketplace at the center. Sounds great.
Yeah. No, it's a 15-minute city.
Yeah. Everyone.
Basically.
That's something that struck me is that, like, I don't remember exactly in which book or what part, but someone, I think Mosscap is like, it seems like people don't travel or something like that. That observation is made. And like Dex is like, yeah, everyone's got pretty much whatever they need. So like, it's pretty rare to have a traveling profession like I do. I'd leave if I was in that technophobe place. Okay. If I'm dead, I'm going to go do technology.
I don't know. I didn't hate them so much, but they did send us like their best possible envoy. Like
that person
Avery
was cool.
Chill.
Yeah. But the rest of the town seemed like buzzkills.
Yeah.
I like the 3D printing. I want the 3D printers.
Dude, the River Shack place seemed chill as fuck. Like, okay, that seemed like a party town.
Is that the town you'd pick?
Yeah, probably. It's like waterfront. Like,
yeah.
I'm going to hang out there. Like, I'm going to be in one of the floating houses. They were describing all the different types. Mine would be for sure floating. I'd be rocking and everything
else.
Dude,
that was a cool ass town. It seems very artsy, so I think I would like it. I'm tempted by the city just because I do love a city.
You get a lot of seafood, though, at the river town.
But you get a lot of seafood at the river. I do love seafood.
But yeah, you're a city cat. You would probably be in the
city.
Cat.
Probably be in the city cat or one of the satellite cities. But I really do love the world building here, particularly how they approach, like, kind of, you know, the environmentalism aspect of they describe this village in the forest where they know how important a forest floor is, so they don't build on it.
Yeah.
So it's all tree houses, and they look fucking cool.
Yeah.
You've got the river people repurposing trash they found in the river when they were cleaning it up. So they're building boats on like big fucking plastic jugs and shit. There's all these biodegradable materials. There's biogas, bioplastics. Their approach to technology is very much like repair it if you can, you know, recycle it if you can't.
You get your computer.
It's your only computer.
People, chat, you guys are, you know, your computers, your pocket computers break down how often?
Right.
Not nearly as often as you replace them, all right? They're sent to, you know...
Fab Shack?
The Imperial. The Imperial Frontier, the hinterlands, the periphery, that's what you call it. They're sent to the periphery and sold for, you know, pennies on the dollar once they get down that line. And that's... They're still okay at that
point. They still like, fucking work, but you are convinced you need a new one.
Yeah.
I do it too. Don't worry. I'm not, I'm not judging.
Because you're only half convinced. The other half is you're coaxed into by planned obsolescence and software updates. Yeah, the new update
won't work with this old phone.
Yeah. So you kind of have to, you know, and they get theirs for life.
Theirs is just like, it's it. You got this when you were fucking 16. Dex is probably what, in their 30s maybe? Yeah. I don't know. They might be 20s.
Maybe late 20s.
I'm going to guess 20. They seem kind of...
Flighty? Okay, mid-20s?
Okay, I'm sorry. You know, I'm sorry, Dex. I'm not trying to add to the judgment on you that you're...
Tell us how you really feel about Dex.
I love Dex, and I understand Dex. I think I'm just... I am very purpose-driven, so, like, when I read or, you know, encounter people who are, like, a little floatier on that, I'm like, fucking figure it out.
No, I was like, Dex, you're onto it.
I feel like you would, like... Yeah, you and Dex are similar in that way.
Yep. Every time I'm like, damn.
That's me. Yep.
What the fuck am I doing here? You're right.
I mean.
But the cities are cool.
Like the cities are cool.
the eco part of it, you were saying that, you know, repairing the cities themselves, like the buildings they were talking about. Yeah. Like they designed the buildings with the death of the building in mind.
Yeah.
It's like, so whereas maybe with, you know, the human characters, like, that mortality does hang over them to a lesser extent with Moscap. I know it mentions that at some point. I'm like, I'm kind of afraid to die, sure.
Sure, not my fave.
But, you know, you have that hanging over you. Whereas humanity as a whole, when they're designing their cities and stuff, they're able to think about, okay, well, what happens when we don't need this building anymore? Or it gets old. We want to be able to, at some juncture, not be beholden to the past and say, well, the city, you know, the building's there, we gotta fix it. Like, what if we don't want it anymore? Mm-hmm. We can let it go into nature and, like, biodegrade.
That's interesting. So do you think the city just has, like, random patches of green space where it's like, yeah, this used to be a building, and then it just kind of went away because no one was using it?
Yeah.
That's kind of cool.
Isn't that awesome?
Yeah.
That would solve the post-pandemic crisis of office space.
What are we going to do with these office buildings?
Yeah, you don't have your boss fucking coaxing you, like, come back, we paid money.
I have to use this.
It's just gone. That's just nice park space for you.
That would be
farmers
great.
Market.
The Olympic villages that get abandoned, don't worry about it. They're going to disintegrate.
It does cut down on ghost towns, which can be cool.
Yeah.
Like, you know, fewer
skate
ruins.
For delinquents. Yeah.
Not as many ruins. Your ruin heads are going to be.
Creepy video makers.
Yeah.
You're like, damn, I really want an abandoned building to shoot in, but those don't exist.
Well, you can build one out of biodegradable materials.
Yeah, you have to commission that.
I like the networks of the cities, too. Like it mentioned, the city.
Mm-hmm.
Also having the satellite villages that produce different things for them.
Yeah, I like that. So it's like
networked and sustainable in the sense of you're probably not getting. And there's a degree of variety that I think Dex gets to enjoy that other people don't necessarily.
Yeah.
Like regional variety that we've talked about on the show before of like, you're probably not going to get very exotic things sometimes. And, you know, in a socialist state that's really trying to do...
Eco, local.
Yeah, like, it's probably not going to be as widespread.
I think
so. It'd be more of a treat. It would be cool to... I would have to try to set this up myself or get with some people or something, but be like a traveling, like, refrigerated cart or something. And then it could be like, this is from the Riverlands or whatever, you know?
Or just, like, have, like, a food festival in the city or something.
Yeah.
And, like, once a year everybody comes and, like, tries crazy foods.
Oh, yeah, that would be cool. Yeah.
And then you can be the traveling food festival and go to all the cities.
Well, this would involve working with the Penguin Transit Cooperative.
Oh, because they're the ones that were like, don't go off the path.
Yeah, I guess they maintain the roads maybe or something.
I think so.
Because the roads seem okay, like they work, except for the roads in the wildlands or whatever. All the rest of them seem to work.
But. Yeah, they seem very well maintained.
Mm-hmm. Also, what did you think about the Wild Guard?
Okay, that's that. They also gave a warning there?
They got some invites or something from the Wild Guard to talk to them or something. They're barely mentioned.
Yeah, I imagine they're fucking park rangers. That's the only... I was like, I just assumed park rangers. I can't imagine a police force in this fucking
I had no
place.
Idea, but the name itself was like...
It's pretty sick.
Yeah, I would want to be in the Wild
Guard. It sounds like you have a sword.
Yeah, you're like Aragorn or something.
Exactly, you're like the fucking Watchers of the Wall.
Yeah, it sounds dope as hell. I have no idea what they do.
I think they're just park rangers, dude.
But it is by far the coolest name in the book.
It's pretty sick.
The Wild Guard.
I like the conversation when Moscap does have that broken piece. Like, it's asking Dex and... Oh, who's the guy that they hook up with?
I don't remember. Smile guy with the bluebeard.
Bluebeard hottie. Leroy.
Bluebeard.
They have a conversation of, like, are you your body? Are you not your body? Mm. And the answer is, like, yes and no. Which I like that. I just,
yeah.
As a trans person, like, if you want to read this for just that alone, great combo.
What do you mean? It's like a, like, sort of duality? Or, cause...
Yeah, it's like, what I like about it is, you know, Dex and Leroy give examples of, like, yeah, your body is important. Like, why else would we make changes to it? You know, like, if you dye your hair or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, it's important enough in that reason. So you kind of are your body, but you're also not just your body. I don't know. I think for me, that's important to remember because I think the way I get perceived by, like, 90% of people, probably 99% of people, is probably going to be incorrect.
Mm-hmm.
But I have enough of an internal sense of self that that's okay.
Yeah.
So I have to, like, be like, hey, you're not just what you look like.
Okay. That makes sense. Your sum of your parts is included, but not sufficient to describe you.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's like part of you. For sure, you can't escape that, but it is like, you're more than that.
Yeah. And I think that those discussions happen in the first book, too.
Mm-hmm.
This is just a really funny moment. Whenever the morning after, Dex sleeps with Leroy, and the robot's like, congratulations on having sex! And apparently it was talking to what's her name, like Miss Jessica or something.
Miss Amelia, the old lady.
And... He was like, yeah, I read all this nasty romance novels she's got in there.
Yeah, Dex is like, oh, she's got like books and stuff. She's got a good book collection. It's like, yep, it's 100% pornography or something. It's like all porn.
Dude, Miss Avery fucking rocks. She's got cats, jet skis, and pornography. I want to be this lady. She's
party,
incredible.
Party old lady, dude.
She's fucking living it up. Living the life.
She's just like kind of giggling back there when... They first show up, too.
Oh, she's so funny.
That's why that's such a chill town. They're just like hanging. Okay, broader thing.
Yeah.
With Dex's romances and... Mm-hmm. Dex's romances seem par for the course of that society. Like, there's nothing in the book that indicates that they are a little wild and
like
swinging.
Flinging. Yeah, it's not seen as negative.
Yeah, no one's ever looking down on them. They're not like, I'm young and free, so this is what I do.
Well, I mean, when we meet their family structure, it is very confusing.
They're poly as hell.
Everyone's poly, and it's like, yeah, this is my siblings. Like, some of them have different parents. It's cool. Like,
and they're all chill with it. And that's also not described as, yeah, you know, our family, like, weird. We're chill or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, like, that seems to be very normal. So, I mean, I think that's a direct correlation from this society of like, yeah, property relations don't fucking matter. So like, do whatever.
Makes sense. Yeah. I tried to tie that in and say, maybe that is part of, evidence, I guess, of the pre-socialist society or whatever of that. Mm. Like they did manage to do the intersectionality of saying like, let's get away with all, you know, do away with all these bigotries and stuff like that. You know, let's take down capitalism. They end up in charge of industry.
Yeah.
They end up in charge of that. And they've taken down capitalism and whatever. And now they're providing for human needs with that mechanism. But all they can, they can figure out automation, they can figure out abundance, but they can't figure out balance of, how to tie it in with the nature question. And so that's how they end up messed up. I don't know if that works, but I'm still trying to explain away how, if you can, if you did.
How you would miss that.
Right. Yeah. Why is like, that?
Oh,
not
we're destroying the planet. Mentioned. That's also important for humans. We can't do that.
Well, yeah. What I mean is, though, if you had capitalists at the helm, you drive your planet up to the brink, and then you realize we've got to do something about it. Like, that's what we are. We're not doing anything about
it. No, currently not
and
at all.
There is no foreseeable way I can imagine writing the history of our world in 1,000 years and describing how we did the big transition and we did all these things, and either nothing bad happened in between, or I somehow leave that out of the story.
I think that's the real question, because if we're going to have this like kind of sanitized version, that's just going to make me wonder, you know, like, did something big happen and just like it was lost for some reason, or we're just kind of going to gloss over it, 'cause that's not the point of this story. Like, that's what I want to know. I have a feeling that like, and this is an ungenerous take, but I have a feeling of like, that's just fucking too hard to explain and write. Like, I'm not going to get into the details. The important thing is what's happening right now in the story.
Yeah, that's probably correct. And I won't fault the author for that, because
I don't fucking know how to do that either.
No, yeah. And
see every episode of this podcast.
It's a really good story. Like, what's put together
it
here
is.
In terms of exploring the ecological relationships, exploring the humanity with the interesting lens of the robot interaction. In terms, I think the robot serves a wonderful bridge of exploring both what does it mean to be human, like, mm-hmm. where's your role, but also kind of the questioning bridge of like, where do you draw a line between you and nature?
An animal, yeah.
And so, like, what is therefore, what is your role in nature? What is our role altogether on this planet? That sort of thing.
Yeah, like, I think it's really beautifully written and very philosophical. I will say, like, what kind of bothers me about, like, even I read, like, the quotes on the back of the book. What are they called? The blurbs. And all of the praise on this is just how fucking cozy it is. And don't get me wrong, it's fucking cozy.
It's cozy.
But nobody on here is like, hey, this is basically eco-socialism. Like, obviously, you couldn't put that on a blurb. But, you know, like, nothing yeah. is really made of, like, how fucking radical this book is.
Right. The best takes I saw on in that regard were, like, it's very positive.
It's Yeah. Like, it's just vaguely positive. It just makes it sound very sweet and tweet.
Someone even said techno-utopianism, which I was like, that sort of misses it a little
not
bit.
Really
because it's not techno.
I mean, they like, have technology. They have pretty good technology. But
it's not, I mean, like, techno is part of the problem. Like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I think it's interesting that the focus of this became, like, look how sweet this is, and not, like, look how fucking interesting this is.
The philosophy of this, I think, was in some ways comforting. You know, it was like, it's okay.
It's okay to be, I think, was the big message.
Right, that was a huge part of it, was, like, at some point, I think it's in the end of the first book, the tea ceremony, where it's like, it's fine to just be, and that's okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, on the one hand, comforting, but on the other hand, like, within that, or beside
reason,
that, maybe?
I think the reason it's comforting is because they've built this fantastic fucking society. You can't just, this wouldn't be comforting if it was set in capitalism. None of this would fucking happen.
Right, it'd be okay. It'd be coping, but it's not. It'd be like what your therapist does. It's just saying, like, it's going to be fine. It's going to be okay.
You found a good life for yourself, Dex. Good job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, yes, but within what? A maelstrom of terrible. Mm-hmm. Like, whereas, yeah, it makes a lot more sense and is able to be lived into in a society where that's actually, like, you're, when you're believing that, it's not at odds with your society, basically.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's in harmony with it.
Well, I mean, this kind of brings me to my last couple of points here. One is, so this is a concept explored in the second book, mm-hmm. Wynne's paradox.
Oh, yeah, I have that too.
So this is the idea that, like, life is fundamentally at odds with itself. I almost think of it like entropy, kind of. And the example given is, you know, kind of a classic ecosystem out of whack story of, well, the wild dogs got overhunted because they were really scary. And then the elk end up taking over, like, fuck yeah, no more dogs. So they overgraze and, like, their rivers get fucked up, like, everything gets fucked up. and they end up having to reintroduce the wild dogs. You know, the sad part of the story is like, this is the best time ever for the elk. They're like, hell yeah, dude, elk time, age the elk.
Age of the elk.
And for humans too, they're like, hell yeah, I feel safer. There's no more wild dogs attacking me.
Age of the dogs has ended. The age of the elk have begun.
It's just like elk banners everywhere.
Tall ass elk, man.
Tall ass elk is having a trip. He's like, fuck yeah, I can see so many of these guys now. But what they're saying is like, creatures or individuals, I guess creatures, are just trying to, they're constantly trying to seek safety. And sometimes to do that, they have to like make bad situations happen. And they even extend this to the people who built the factories. They say these people were just trying to like make a surplus, make more for themselves. Mm-hmm. And look what they did. They threw the planet out of balance.
Which lends to the socialist.
Yeah.
Because there's no bad guy.
Yeah, that's like, true. There wasn't like, it's because they're being enslaved.
Right. Like, if we look at our society, there's no argument that, like, Jeff Bezos is trying to make anybody more comfortable or Elon Musk. Oh, if you
believe the propaganda, yes.
Yeah, sure. He's just trying to make jobs for everyone. Making jobs. You know? Just
providing goods and services.
But, like, no, we have that with, like, way less than we currently have. Like, humanity as a whole, for one, is not making decisions. Like, it's only a few people. But to the extent that those few people are making decisions, they're not making it to be more comfortable. They're making it for like immense, grotesque amounts of wealth and power.
Impossible amounts to spend.
But if you imagine a society more like the elk, then we would be more communistic. If we would be more like everyone's making decisions together for our own common good. And it is for our own common good to build as much shelter as we can, to bring in as many resources as we can and make things as comfortable as we can with the technology we have and whatever. Maybe we're not paying attention to how sustainable that is or whatever. And then we do like the elk and we fuck up the environment because we're trying to make it comfortable for ourselves as a whole. There's no bad guy with that. That is naturally what we're doing. It just does suck environmental-wise and we end up fucking things up.
This makes me kind of question the humans, is it humans theory? Because either one, their climate is so, I mean, it's not Earth.
Really, no, yeah.
Because it's just not, it's a fucking
plate tectonics wise. It's, yeah. Yeah, that too. Yeah.
We know it ain't the planet.
We're not a moon.
We're not a moon. We don't got a planet rise. But if they came over, they had this new ass planet. So they have the clock is set at a totally different pace in terms of climate change.
Okay.
Like, you come to a fresh-ass planet from spacefaring, like, you're way ahead. And so then you start up your factory age, whatever. You have a much longer runway until things get bad, I guess is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes me wonder, okay, did they come from a spacefaring capitalist society or a spacefaring socialist society, basically? Like, if you were a socialist society, it would take you a really long time to fuck up the environment that badly when they then say, oh, fuck, we need to backtrack here. Maybe that's part of the factor of, I don't know. They don't really talk about humans evolving on this planet.
That's true. They don't mention that at all.
But they also don't talk about we got here, which you think would be kind of important.
Right. Because next, they seem to remember snippets, at least, of their history class when it comes into play. So, but they're just like any, not to rag on the chat, but they're just like any, you know, student of average paying attentionness. I'm just like, yeah, I remember that. Something about this. Yeah. I thought that was really interesting, though, of like maybe it that sort of a lack of a bad guy explains or points toward what their society was like.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's a weird analogy to be like, oh, you know,
they didn't mean factory age. They just ruined the planet.
Oops. You know, we just did some rampant capitalism and here we are.
Oopsie.
You know.
I hate when I accidentally do that. My final note, I don't know about you, but is the title, the second book, A Prayer for the Crown Shy. They, at the end, talk about what that means, what Crown Shy means.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a real thing. The trees do.
Yeah, I've seen this before.
They leave each other room to grow. They don't get in each other's way. They, you know, people say, oh, survival of the fittest, the natural world is all just out to fucking kill each other.
Yeah.
Trees are not like that. Plants are not like that. They give each other room, and it's not competitive. It's like, hey, we're all going to grow together. It's very nice.
It's an alternative.
Yeah.
And it's sort of the view of the book. both books really is this alternative of we can live in harmony. In some respects, the book's lack of explanation as to how do they get here,
yeah,
all that could fit into, theme-wise anyway, that crown shy motif of that being the alternative of us maybe called action or whatever, but like there's the alternative of being more like plants that don't compete in that way of humans as a part of nature can be non-competitive, can work together and give each other space and can do these major transitions without going for each other's throats. And maybe that's the kind of positive argument it's making of like, I know that you are looking at a society where that would happen if this came to pass, but it does not, it's not written in stone anywhere that it has to be that way. It does look like it probably must be that way for you currently, but like maybe you could change that. Maybe that does not have to happen.
Yeah, you know? I think both books spend a lot of time on, again, what it means to be a human versus an animal in terms of instincts. And, mm-hmm. you know, your instincts are a part of you. You can't just say, like, no, I don't have them. I'm not an animal. But
not me.
You are also more than that. You know, yeah. Same with the conversation about your body. Same with the conversation about, you know, your genes. Like, you're always, you can always choose to be more, I guess. And even with the robots choosing morality. Like, they chose that, you know?
Agency is a big theme for them, too.
For sure.
Like Moscap.
Mm-hmm.
It decides not to do murder.
Okay, yeah.
From its point of view. It's like having a chill time with Dex. Like, just hanging with the bros. Yeah, cooking. And it's like, will you harvest some time? And Moscap's all of a sudden like,
oh, my God.
You want me to do what?
You want me to kill a plant?
And Dex is like, that's fine. I'll do it.
Like, yeah. And even Dex has, like, their own line that they don't cross of, like, yeah, I don't eat meat unless, like, someone gives it to me.
Mm-hmm.
Or I hunt it, and I don't really go hunting or fishing. They're still eating plants that are dead. You know, like, mm-hmm. it's really interesting that everyone has their own kind of approach to this. And yeah. I'm sure if you went to the different villages and stuff, like those techno people, you know, or anti-techno people.
Well, yeah, they have an important scene with the technophobes, too, if they go fishing.
Mm-hmm.
And
the guy makes a point of, we can take this fish, because we can tell it already has had babies.
That was so cool.
I love that.
Did you, like, look at the stripe on it?
Is that a thing, like, fish people? We don't know.
Yeah, chat. Fish chat. Fish chat. What do we have here?
Sound off. So there's that, and I think definitely that's a factor of, like, yeah, they're in a super nature-y place.
Mm.
I would assume that there's sustainable fishing practices, like, around the country just because of how fucking sustainable they are everywhere
else.
It's
gotta be.
But yeah, and then they let the air kill it. They don't, like, smash it or whatever, you know? Cut it. I don't know. I've never been fishing. I've been fishing, but I was very little.
I don't actually know the process of it. You can put it in, like, a little tank with water and stuff and then kill it later.
In the survival show I watch, they bonk him with a rock, usually.
Oh,
damn. Well, it seems
what like is this, naked and alone, or what is it?
Just called alone.
Just alone?
Just alone.
Fully clothed and alone.
Fully clothed and alone, usually wearing REI. Yeah, they bonk it so it doesn't suffer more. But in the book, they watch it.
They let it suffer.
Go without oxygen.
I thought it was cool. So that scene there was interesting, the quote that I took from that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I think there's something beautiful about being lucky enough to witness a thing on its way out.
It's like Tony Soprano.
It's the anti-Tony Soprano quote. Exactly.
Yeah.
Because the quote there is like, always had the feeling that I was got in on the ground floor, like when it was on its...
When it was on its way out or something.
Yeah, something, yeah. Butchered that quote, but you know what I mean.
That's like the very first episode he says that. He's like, I feel like I'm on the tail end of this.
Yeah, like I'm watching something that, but it's like bad, you know? This is like the anti-nostalgia take of being able to like appreciate something that was something that's going away, and rather than like mourning it,
yeah,
sort of
celebrating it, enjoying it,
yeah, realizing more maturely that nothing is permanent, including yourself. It's similar to what Dex undergoes when they go back home. Mm-hmm. They have that little conversation.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
Whenever they're describing what the feeling of going back home when things have changed, like mm-hmm. the door is painted or the fence is fixed, whatever. And I felt this a lot when I was writing my book of, like, I'm writing about a place that doesn't really exist anymore.
Yeah.
Because it's, of course it's changed. I haven't been back in like 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be different when I do go back because I'm different.
Yeah.
And that's a really, like, a lot of writing that book for me was about kind of managing my grief around that. I don't know. I think it's a really important process, and it's a really interesting process to go through. And it's important to have that kind of relationship with yourself where you're okay with the fact that, like, you're going to change. Like, mm-hmm. you have to be okay with that, or else you're going to be a very unhappy person.
Right. Yeah. You're going to be clinging to an unreality where you don't make any changes in your life, which is just like, even if you're, everyone changes and people, you know, try to actively change and stuff, but even if you don't, like, you will.
Yeah.
You know, like, just life. And it's the, goes back to, we're just quoting early show stuff, but, like, it goes back to the old, you know, stepping in the river quote of, mm-hmm. of dialectics of, mm-hmm. like, people change, the stream changes. And that's what exactly what Dex is saying here. It's just the dialectics of returning home of, like, you have changed, your house has changed, the people there have changed. That's good. Yes. And you should be looking to orient yourself and your life and how you see the world and everything, not around what was and let's be sad about that, and more around what world can we build out of what has come to pass, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think this applies to so many things. I think if you think about, like, relationships, like, I think people view marriage as the end of it when it's, like, fucking hopefully the beginning, you know? But, yeah. like, your relationship is going to change. And you can get freaked out by that and say, oh, we're not as, like, fucking adventurous as we used to be or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can say, yeah, we're different people now. Like, we have different priorities and that's okay.
Yeah. I think that's the more mature. And I thought the book did a really good job of being, like, it was kind of sad.
It is kind of sad.
Right? But it's the more accurate, I guess, way to look at it. And the more, like, mature or accepting the way that you're going to be more in harmony with what is versus more discordant in your mind.
Yeah.
Way of looking at it.
Yeah. Like, right. I think just more appreciative in general of, in this case, the specific, like, the fish is going to feed you. That's fucking great.
Yeah. No one came out of the fishing trip and was like, oh, gee, didn't you guys like seeing it twitch and die?
Yeah, like, you know, like, no, that wasn't a good time.
Right, but it was necessary. Maybe they could have eaten trail rations or something. You can make this argument, but, like, it was part of their system, and it was going to, something, you know, consuming was going to happen. I mean, it's part of the natural cycle.
Yeah, I think that's the point of, like, I don't think you really meet a lot of, I mean, obviously, Mousecap being the ultimate vegan.
Yeah.
But you don't really meet a lot of vegans in this.
He's, like,
you
know? More than even a freegan. Yeah. Like, he doesn't.
Just a nogan. I just don't fuck
Eternal me. Hunger strike.
The most moral. But, like, you don't really, I don't recall hearing about any vegetarians specifically. I'm sure there are people, though, who are just like, yeah, that's my own personal line. I'm not going to cross it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not really moralized, I guess.
They're not mentioned in the books, but it would make sense for someone to have that particular,
maybe an approach. Ecologian or whatever.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it doesn't say that's stupid or that's fucked up.
No, so. Not at all. Don't. We're not judging you.
No, I just mean, yeah, even when the book, it's just not touched on. It's one of the many things, I guess, like the big revolutionary question. Not
tell
answered.
Us, Becky. Come on the show. Okay, ratings. I mean, I fucking adore this series. I read it last year and it hit me so fucking hard, and a lot of it has stuck with me. And I think sitting in this world for a long time, it's almost kind of bittersweet because, you know, I think about it, you know, when I'm driving and I'm like, man, I could not be driving right now. I think about that a lot, though, just because I'm like, fuck, I wish I had a train. Which, that's one, they don't really have, like, trains. It's very much like just bike places. Is this planet super small or moon? It is a moon, so I guess it might be smaller.
Maybe. I mean, Dex describes they're biking all over.
Yeah. That's why I think it has to be partially motorized.
Yeah, with the electric. Yeah.
Because I think they even mention at one point, like, it can help you up a hill or something.
Hmm.
Or maybe.
But it still sounds kind of small.
It does. Like, it feels like just a country size. Mm-hmm. Like, a big country, but still a country.
Yeah. It's like Australia.
Yeah, that's what I'm picturing. Anyway. Yeah, they don't mention trains. Like, it seems like to travel, you have to do a bike. So
maybe trains are too...
too uneco?
Yeah.
Well, I've seen those trains that have the... you can plant grass underneath and flowers underneath the tracks.
Whoa.
Yeah, I saw a picture this week and I was like, that's sick. It was in Prague. Shout out to Prague.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, I guess I think about this book a lot and like, it is bittersweet because it is such a beautiful and nicely constructed world that I'm just like, man, I want that. You know, like it can, it can feel a little frustrating or like we're so fucking far away from that. Like, but it's also, I think, very inspiring for that reason too. Of like, man, maybe we will get there one day. And I don't know exactly what's going to take. Maybe it's robots waking up, but like, damn, I hope we get there. I would recommend this if, I don't think it's necessarily a conversion book, but I think it's a maybe think about it book. You know, it's like a step before conversion of like, does this world sound cool?
What do you think? It's probably good for liberals though, right? Like, it's not conversion, but it is like soften them up.
It's something to chew on, you know, because I think the way they explain the currency, I think that system is enough for them to get their little bureaucrat rocks off.
Time store tokens.
Exactly. Be like, oh, you've got some sort of system.
But they're not anarchists. Oh my God.
Except they totally are. You know, I think it gives enough to say, hey, this world seems really fucking cool. We're actually considering the environment. We're considering, you know, social currency in some fashion. It's not barracks communism by any means. You know, it seems very nice. Yeah, I don't know if it's a, you know, it's definitely not a conversion book. It doesn't fucking use the word communism for one thing, so you wouldn't really get them on board.
They use capitalism.
They do.
But they don't say socialism or communism.
No, but
it's okay.
I think it's a good start just to be like, hey, does this sound cool? Are you fucking in?
Yeah. I also like it as an angle for your lefty friends who always annoy you with the economic numbers and stuff. Like, your types, like I probably used to be before the show, of like being less of an eco guy. Like, I was like, yeah, sure. I mean,
sure, I like the
earth. You know, the earth is pretty good, but we got to do, you know, we got to do the revolution and we got to like give people jobs and make sure people have money and all that shit. I mean, like, you know, yeah, obviously help the earth, but
it was more of a secondary.
Yeah. You know, and this is,
puts it up front.
It's up front and it's, I don't know, it's also, it, to me, comes across as kind of softening of like everybody, every human, no matter how like science or factual or whatever they want to present themselves as, should grapple in some way with their role as a part of an ecology, as a part of a, as a part of nature in general.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that is honestly what their religion is set up for, is to say, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You making stuff? You learning stuff? How are you helping people?
Yeah.
Are you comforting people? Great.
And it's, yeah, it's this thing of like remembering, it's even with the robots too, of like remembering your mortality, you're part of the cycle. That's their like main parent god is the cycle god, that you're going to return to that. And like the fish, it's probably going to be sad for you.
It's going to be brief.
And it's going to be sad for the people, you know, watching you go. Hopefully not for the people who murdered you and are watching you, you know, suffocate. But what I mean is like the end of your cycle is going to serve a purpose or going to be a part of a larger thing. And like even that, not to mention like, you know, whatever you've done in life, all that, that's going to, it's enough to be, was one of the big messages there is like.
And I think the other message of it's enough to comfort is really important, because I think we feel very self-conscious about that at times. Like, what the fuck are we doing here? Just yapping around all week. You know, or me, like, I'm just making stupid comics about my feelings, whatever.
Yeah.
Like,
we're the tea monks.
Yeah, like, that can be enough. It can be important. It helps you do other work. And, you know, like, this is why the arts are fucking important. Like, when people try to go all STEM crazy, you know.
Say, maybe we can have artists later once the commune is up and running.
Exactly. It's like, no, you need that to live.
Yeah.
I didn't actually give a number. 5 out of 5. Obviously. No pressure. You can go lower. I don't mind.
I really liked it, though. What do you think? To judge it on what it gives me, like, to judge it on what it is, I think I should give it a 5 out of 5.
Okay.
Because that's the type of book it is. That's what it's like. That's what I like about it.
It's okay to just be a book.
Yeah, it's okay to just be a book. And, you know, it doesn't answer all of my questions, but that's also, leaning to being a 5, is that, like, I get to talk about, like, what stupid ideas I have for what happened before.
That's like, funny.
I like that. Like, are you speculating about... I thought I wasn't going to have barely any notes for this.
I was worried about that, too, in my first read of it.
And then when I was like, well, you know, but what about this? What if, could it be this before the factory age? Like, you know, that's not in there. But, like, it gave me the opportunity to do that by being, you know, vague enough on those details. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, not just, like, writing an incomplete book, but, like, focusing on those parts that I wouldn't focus on, of, like, the human nature, the... fitting in, the like validation of being yourself and
appreciating consciousness. Like, that's a thing we don't do enough.
Yeah.
Like, it's lovely.
Those deeper questions that the self-stylized hardened revolutionary doesn't have time for. You know, it's just like, oh, I'm worried about how I'm going to take down the capitalists or some stupid shit like that. Well, it's like, yeah, but you also got to, you know, think about what is to, you know, win the world and lose your soul.
Yeah.
You know, you can't do that. So, 5 of 5, I guess. I didn't come down off the fence. 5 of 5.
5 out of 5. Okay. I mean, I think it's fair. Like, I think for me, like, I don't know, I kind of selfishly rate things as, like, would I read it again? Would I recommend it to people? I think reading it is a big factor for me because I do love to revisit, like, my very top favorite books. I make it a point to reread.
Yeah.
And this one, I have already reread it. So,
I reread.
I know I will.
The first book I had read.
Yeah.
So, I reread that and then read the second one.
Yeah.
So. And they're super quick. Like, I'm bad so at fast. Reading, basically. Like, I'm slow is what I should say. But yeah, I knocked these out in like 2 days.
Yeah.
Both, so.
Same. I'm very fast reading. I read most of it in one day, but most of both in one day. But
yeah.
Yeah, highly recommend. I really hope there's more because I want more of this world. It's lovely.
Yeah. Maybe.
Hopefully.
Friend of the show, Becky Chambers.
Please, get at me.
Chat, go...
Or go follow her and ask her for more.
Yeah.
Okay. Next week, we're shooting the shit.
Sounds good.
All right.
See you then and not a moment before.
Definitely not. Yeah. Oh, we probably will never hang out.
Yeah.
Except for the show. Sure.
All right. Adios.
Bye. Hey there, comrades. Just jumping in to remind you of all of our social media. We are on Twitter at Teach Communism, Instagram at Teach Me Communism. You can shoot us an email. That's teachmecommunism@gmail.com. Any of those places are good to send us an episode suggestion or a question, anything you think would be useful feedback for us, or just your admiration. If you want to admire us in a public manner, and you should, you can go to Apple Podcasts to give us a review. It is the best way to help people find the show. Love when people write and review us. Please do both. We are also on YouTube if that's how you prefer to listen to podcasts, or if you know someone that's the only way they'll listen to podcasts, send them to our page. And we have a Patreon. For $5 a month, you get access to our notes for each week's episode, including the backlog of notes, which is a very handy resource for up-and-coming commies. And at the end of the year, all of the funds from Patreon will be given to local mutual aid in the DFW area. So, ain't going to line our pockets. Finally, we have merch. Check us out at TeePublic. You can find shirts and I believe also stickers and magnets and all kinds of fun stuff with catchphrases from the show or episode art, stuff like that. The link to that store is in the show notes, so check that out. Okay, that's all the internet. Join us next time for another episode of Teach Me Communism, where the class struggle is always in session. Bye, y'all.